as we continue looking at this life of Paul, we come to a time where there's this huge persecution that's going on for Christians. We read in Acts 8, beginning at verse 1, and Saul approved of his execution, talking about the execution of Stephen. And there arose on that day a great persecution against the church in Jerusalem. And they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. Devout men buried Stephen and made great lamentation over him. But Saul was ravaging the church, and entering house after house, he dragged off men and women and committed them to prison. So he's relentless in his efforts to stomp out this growing Christian movement. And we see him not only approving of Stephen's death, but he also launched this war, all-out war, against fellow Jews who had been putting their faith and trust in Jesus Christ. And he began to destroy the church by going house to house. So you can imagine literally dragging both men and women through the streets of Jerusalem and locking them up in prison. Years later, after Paul had become a Christian, he testified publicly in Jerusalem that he had put many of the saints in prison, and when they were put to death, he cast his vote against them, just as he had done with Stephen. He even went a step further and tried to force them to blaspheme in order to have a valid reason, according to the law, to sentence them to death. So when he resorted to this kind of manipulation, his belief was that he was right, and that led him to a rationalization to do what so many do when they desperately want to achieve their goal. And that's, in their minds, the end justifies the means. The persecution that he had launched was so intense that the majority of Christians just had to flee for their lives. They left Jerusalem and they were looking for a place of refuge in parts of Judea and even into Samaria. However, the greater the persecution, the more Christianity grew and survived. And so Luke has recorded that those who had been scattered preached the word wherever they went. And so we have this young man named Saul. We read about him in Acts 7:58, and it says that then they cast him out of the city, talking about Stephen, and stoned him, and the witnesses laid down their garments at the feet of a young man named Saul. So his involvement in Stephen's martyrdom is the first reference to him in the Bible. But how and why did he suddenly walk onto the stage in Jerusalem and he has this powerful role? When did he come to Jerusalem, the holy city? Had he ever met Jesus personally or at least heard him teach? Well, we can't answer those questions definitively. We have enough details from his own letters as well as from Luke's record in the book of Acts to maybe reconstruct much of his life before this event. And this reconstruction helps us understand what was the driving force. Why did he do this? And so we look at his birthplace and ultimately his dual citizenship. We don't know exactly how old he was when he stood there on those outskirts of Jerusalem and approves of the death of Stephen. However, most Bible students believe he was between 30 and 35 years of age. And that would mean he was born approximately the same time as Jesus, but in a totally different area of Roman Empire. A number of years after he became a Christian and a great missionary to the Gentile world, he goes back to Jerusalem and he addresses a large crowd and says, "I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no ordinary city." And so when he states that Tarsus is no ordinary city, he's referring to that as a historical fact. It's the capital of Cilicia. It most likely numbered 500,000 people when Paul lived there. And the Taurus Mountains were located approximately 25 miles north. Rich minerals and woodlands, timber, are the products that would come from this area. And in addition to this, Tarsus was noted for its leather goods and a cloth identified as silicium, which came from the hair of black goats. Now, this cloth would be used to make tents, and that was a trade that Paul learned as a young apprentice to his father. And in fact, even after he became a missionary and he would run short of money, he would work doing that, being a tent maker, to make ends meet. Tarsus had been this self-governing location from the time it was a Greek city-state. And when Rome conquered Greece, they honored Tarsus and gave the city the standing of Libera Civitas, Latin words that mean a free city. And so at that time, Paul is born. That standing gave the people of Tarsus the right to continue to govern themselves and to be free from many of Rome's taxes. Consequently, when Paul eventually did missionary work throughout the Roman Empire, and when government leaders learned that Paul was from Tarsus, it carried a great deal of power, a great deal of weight. And Paul was also a Roman citizen by birth. And that's a privilege held by only a few people throughout the empire. But even more significantly, he's a citizen of Tarsus. A guy by the name of Robert Piccarelli writes about this. A person who is a citizen of a city in the Roman Empire was therefore automatically a person of influence. Inasmuch as Paul spent his boyhood in Tarsus, we can be confident that he became a citizen of that city in the same way that he got his citizenship from Rome, namely because his father was already a citizen. This has some very strong implications for our understanding of Paul's background. For one thing, it suggests that Paul was from a family of some influence and probably wealth. One thing required for inclusion in the role of citizens was that one had to own property of certain worth. So Tarsus was also, they had a great university there, and it was more prominent than Athens and Alexandria. And its people pursued culture avidly, and they studied philosophy and the liberal arts. And at some point in time, Paul was exposed to this educational environment, which we'll see later was reflected in his sermons and in his correspondence. Well, let's look at his background. Paul was definitely the product of two different cultures. Not only was he raised in the Greco-Roman environment, but he is also chiefly Jewish. And in that address Paul delivered in Jerusalem after his missionary journeys, he states, "I am a Jew, born in Tarsus of Cilicia," in chapter 22, verse 3. Paul's father was an Orthodox Jew, a fact which had more impact on him than the environment, and he grew up learning to speak and write Koine Greek, and that's the common language of the Roman Empire. However, he was also exposed to Hebrew from the time he was born, and that's why he identified himself as a Hebrew of the Hebrews. Even though he was a Grecian Jew, a term used to describe Israelites who lived in other parts of the Roman world outside of Jerusalem and Judea, he had the ability to speak very well in the Hebrew tongue. And in all actuality, this language is identified as Aramaic, a language of the Chaldeans that replaced ancient Hebrew after the children of Israel were taken into captivity. So as a young boy, he learned the Old Testament law from the time he could hear and speak. And his father certainly took Moses' instructions very seriously when he gave to the children of Israel before they entered Canaan. You see that in Deuteronomy 6, 6 through 9. "These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your forehead. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." So Paul would have committed to memory great sections of the Old Testament. He would devote hours to listening, reading, and reciting the Targums, which are translations of the ancient Hebrew into either Aramaic or Greek. And in fact, Paul probably memorized the scriptures in both languages. So he starts to study with a gentleman by the name of Gamaliel. When he reached his teen years, probably between 13 and 14, he left Tarsus and traveled to Jerusalem, where he'd study to be a rabbi. And he had a tutor named Gamaliel. And this person would be a grand master who was respected throughout the Jewish world. And in that same address that we looked at earlier, Paul told the Jerusalem audience he had been brought up in Jerusalem and thoroughly trained in the law. And Gamaliel was also a member of the Sanhedrin, and that's the ruling body in Jerusalem. And it was the same men who sentenced Stephen to death. So it's doubtful that Gamaliel participated directly in that act. On an earlier occasion, when the Jewish leaders had wanted to put the apostles to death, Gamaliel had addressed them and warned them to not take such an action. You got to leave these men alone. Let them go, he told them. He reasoned that if their purpose or activity is of human origin, it's going to fail. But if it's from God, you will not be able to stop these men. You'll only find yourselves fighting against God. And he says this in Acts 5, 38 to 39. So we can put these thoughts together that he's probably overruled in the decision to stone Stephen, or he experienced this huge change in his thinking. It's possible either way. But the idea that he may even had already died. Paul learned most of his Jewish theology from this man, Gamaliel. And even as a young boy, he was on his way to becoming a dedicated Pharisee while he still lived in Tarsus. He became a full-fledged member of that group after learning at the feet of Gamaliel. Josephus says that the Pharisees numbered about 6,000 when Paul emerged as one of their zealous leaders. Another commentator named F.F. Bruce outlines the way in which Pharisees practiced their religion, which certainly would describe Paul before he got saved. He said this, "The Pharisees exercised great care in observing the Sabbath law and the food restrictions. They scrupulously tithed the produce of their soil, not only grain, wine, and oil, but garden herbs as well, and refused to eat food that was subject to the tithe unless the tithe had actually been paid on it. In their study of the law, they built up a body of interpretation and application, which in due course acquired a validity equal to that of the written law." So this explanation helps us understand why Paul wrote to the Philippians and stated that in regard to the law, he was a Pharisee, and as for legalistic righteousness, he was faultless. He was dedicated to obeying every jot and tittle of this written code. And it's understandable since he firmly believed that he could gain righteousness before God by keeping this law of Moses and the traditions of the elders. So consequently, when he joined that group, he was fully committed to the rigorous disciplines of this Jewish sect. So after his studies under Gamaliel, Paul eventually returned to Tarsus, probably 5 or 6 years after he arrived in Jerusalem. And this would make him about 18 or 19. So we can only speculate that his activities that were in his home city for the next 12 to 14 years. He evidently served as a rabbi in one of the local synagogues, perhaps a synagogue of the freedmen. And during that time, he certainly became exposed to a broader education in Greek and Roman culture. What he learned only made him more zealous. He wanted to be a Pharisee that took all of this seriously. And so after spending approximately 15 years in Tarsus, this young man named Saul once again returned to Jerusalem. Now, we're not told why. We can only speculate on this, but we can assume that he had received regular reports from his father and others who, as God-fearing Grecian Jews, made regular trips to Jerusalem to worship in the temple. And in fact, since he came from a wealthy family, both Paul and his father and other members of that family may have been visiting in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost when the Holy Spirit descended. But unlike thousands of other Jews, if they were there, they rejected Peter's message. So whatever the actual facts, Paul had to have been terribly frustrated when he received reports about the growth of this thing called the church in Jerusalem. he became terribly angry at fellow Jews that were converting to this thing called Christianity. And even further, he had to have had some kind of ongoing connection with the Sanhedrin to have emerged so quickly as the leader in the great persecution that followed Stephen's death. However, when the Holy Spirit inspired Luke to write a second letter to Theophilus, that being Acts, he did not think it was necessary for us to understand all these details. So consequently, he simply recorded that those who stoned Stephen laid their clothes at the feet of a young man named Saul. So thankfully today, we have much more information about Paul from the letters he wrote as a Christian, which give us a more complete and inspiring story. So we have to have an understanding that every one of us have a history. Every one of us bring with us what we've experienced, what we've learned. And so this is how we're working through this life of Saul and then ultimately Paul, as he changed his name later. We're seeing how God can work in a young man's life to ultimately bring him to himself.